Family Life, your host, Salima Muhammad and Dr. Nadia Muhammad. This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent, Arad Speaks. This week's discussion in Family Life, Public Health Education, a Crisis. Dr. Muhammad, welcome!
Oh, thank you. Assalamu alaikum to everyone, to you, the listening audience. It's good to be back on the show this morning, so thank you for having me.
Listen, my beloved. We in the Islamic community are observing the Eid al-Adha, which honors the willingness of Ibrahim to sacrifice his son Ishmael as an act of obedience to Allah's command, and how appropriate for today's universal discussion regarding public health education, a crisis. Dr. Muhammad, it's so wonderful to have you. How are you doing?
I am doing well, by Allah's grace and permission. I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
I am blessed.
Wonderful. Eid Mubarak.
Eid Kareem. And I am so thankful to be here today with our listening audience so we can discuss issues. And I want to say that's plaguing the world.
Yes.
You know, this morning I spoke to my beautiful brother, Brother Ibrahim Sharif, not a stranger here to this show. And I'm going to start off with paraphrasing. A thought process that was paralleled by us both. And we don't always have the opportunity to speak, but when we do speak, there's a synergistic existence of a thought process that always reflect Allah and His blessings. And what was discussed is the social stratification. We talk about the crisis of public health education. Dr. Muhammad, you are a professional, a public health practitioner, and I, a public health candidate. And we say with the myriad of issues regarding the public health sector, where are these issues stemming from? So going back to my beautiful brother and what we had the blessing, the opportunity to discuss this morning, simplify what we're experiencing, not only in this country, but in the world. So the social stratification of society taken Allah, the divine, a God, whomever you refer to, of the minds or the consciousness of the minds of the people. Dr. Muhammad, what does that mean to you?
Well, you know, there's some things that are going through my mind as you speak right now. You had mentioned that the crux of our conversation was around public health education. And as I'm thinking about public health in general, you know, when you're in the school system, public health is really a dimension, a small segment of what's taught in the educational system, which I really think that it's really injustice because public health education is very important. But I wanted to point to some problems. I don't want to say problems, but they are very systemic in the U.S. public school system, the education system in general. Really, you know, our children, when you talk to them and you garner feedback from them about what they're doing in school, it just sounds like really it's the wild, wild west. It's more of a jungle than an environment that's conducive for learning and growing and evolving as a human being. And that our children spend a vast majority of their time in school, so the influences are great. But what's happening in the school systems are really tearing our children down from an emotional standpoint, a mental, and in some cases, a physical standpoint. And so there are lots of things that's going through my head right now regarding the educational system, but it really has been a broken system for a very, very, very long time. And so that's how I wanted to kind of like start the discussion, that there's a very serious problem in the public education system, and our children are suffering. So I don't know whether you have anything in addition that you want to add to that, but I just wanted to start the conversation off with that. And mostly, I'll add one other thing, which is the most important thing, is that you don't have Allah, God, in the educational system. And we are from Allah. Allah says in the Quran, in Surah 4, verse 1, O people, keep your duty to your Lord who created you from a single being, right, and created its mate of the same kind, and spread from these two many men and women. So it's the essence. We're from Allah. We're from his essence. We're his core. But the core and essence is not introduced into the school system, and that's where the breakdown begins. So I just want to start off by saying that. Sister Salima, thank you for the question.
Very good. And I am going to address, you know, some more of what you just stated with regard to education, especially here in this country. And then I'm going to touch on some education systems in the world. That being said, families, how the unit and the cohesiveness of families exist is imperative to our not only ecological balance, but our psychological balance. So from, you mentioned, Dr. Muhammad, the segment of public health, and I just remember being in class and having, and you'll remember this too, Dr. Muhammad, having several MD students in the public, the PhD public health program. And so I would ask my peers, you know, whom were MDs, and I said, why are you in this class? And they would explicitly explain, when we go to medical school, we only have 1 to 2 classes on public health. We know nothing about disease and diagnosis, where it technically stems from.
Right.
One of the first phrases, Dr. Muhammad, you can back me up.
Yeah, it's true.
that I learned in the public health program, the root of all disease, certainly you have systemic phenomena in different various parts of the body, but we were told that it begins with the mind. That gave me pause.
Mm-hmm.
because there are many idioms on a daily basis. You are one of them. You are what you think. So as we talk about the education system in the United States and the education system in the world, what are we feeding the mind?
Hmm.
There's another idiom that goes along those lines. You are what you eat. All of these things, what feeds what? The mind. A healthy mind, a healthy body.
That's a good point.
So before going into the specific education system, the Association of Schools of Public Health, a scholarly article was conducted by several public health professionals. Dr. Linda Rosenstock, Jillian D. Silver, Karen Helsing, Connie Vashewick, Ruth Katz, Michael Clagg, Gerald Kaminsky, Donna Richards, and Ciro Sumaya. And these professionals are MDs. Some of them are MPH, Masters in Public Health, Masters in Health Science, PhDs. Scholarly article that speaks about the myriad of health consequences in communities preparing for disasters. And different issues and threats, terrorist acts, other conditions outside of national boundaries. So they're saying, look, we need an existing workforce in public health, which is diminishing, by the way.
Please. There is no workforce.
And that there's no systematic effort to date to assess national needs. Wait a minute, what? Are we going backwards? So in the year 2000, and we're in 22 years later, there were about $50,000 fewer public health professionals than in 1980. And here we are today, we're having a shortage between 150,000, this is 2020, and topped off by 2020, 450,000 professionals that are needed today. What?
Hmm.
More than 50% of state sites lack trained professionals as a barrier to our nation's preparedness. The Institute of Medicine, the IOM report states that there's a shortage of 10,000 public health physicians. So this is why some of the MDs were in those programs. 10,000. In various states. So we really have a problem, which takes us back to our consciousness. What is our consciousness? So currently I work in the financial sector, and you get the pulse of not only of this country, but the world. Minimally consciousness, how we work with money, is very problematic. So education begins with some of the basics of how we run our homes. So we have to really think, yes, there are indicators and factors that are leading to incident, inflation. We're going into a stagnation. And what a stagnation essentially means is that we've been in an inflation more than 12 months. And they says, we're about to enter inflation. We've been here, people. And we've been here for a while. So as a result, we need to do things differently. So Dr. Muhammad, we're going to talk. I'm going to speak about the educational sectors again, but I want to spend some time on that consciousness of how we live our daily life, the foods we eat, the exercise. This is your specialty, Dr. Muhammad. Can you touch on some of that for us?
Right. So, you had mentioned something very, very important regarding the mindset. It's the person's mindset in terms of how a person views life, and it really starts out at home. But what I wanted to bring to the audience's attention, and we all witness this in the world today, is that our young people, and in general, you know, education starts at home. But if you're not have a home where the name of God is mentioned, whether you call God Allah, Jehovah, by whatever name that you call him, if that name is not mentioned or God is not recognized as the head of that household, then God's consciousness is not going to be recognized outside of that household, whether it's in the workforce, whether it's in the educational system, whatever sector that you're in, you're not going to have that God force that's going to be exuded in that environment. And so you had mentioned earlier, Sister Salima, about, you know, the school system, and you wanted to touch on that a bit later, because it actually does start in the home. I totally agree with that. And I wanted to say that, you know, our children, they're being fed a diet that's not in alignment with Allah, God, higher power, again, by whatever name you want to call him. You know, our children are being fed the diet of social media, Facebook, IG, as they call it, Instagram. Our children are being thrown in front of the television as early as, I don't know, 6 months, 9 months, a year old, watching television shows at that age, and instead of being fed the word of Allah, the recitation of the Quran, or reading your child a book, expanding their knowledge the minute they come out the womb, that's what's important. I think that's the elements that's missing, and that's why we're in a crisis right now from a public health perspective, from societal perspective, and just in general, we're in crisis. And our nations are the ill effects of that. And so I kind of just wanted to point that out, that, you know, the problem starts at home when Allah is not the head of the household. Now, I know we have households where they're very fractured. Sometimes the woman is the head of the household. And it's, I'm telling you, men are becoming head of households. It's becoming more common than it was 20 years ago. But without Allah, God being the head of the household, that's where the trouble begins. And so that's the foundation. And we don't actually have the foundation as a society. And as a community, we don't have it either. So I think it actually starts there. And so we don't create healthy habits. Because really, be honest with you, with some of the people that's in our households are struggling, trying to figure out how they're going to pay the utility bill, how they're going to cook for their children, how are they going to pay their rent or pay their mortgage, how are they going to be able to afford gas. And they, you know, our people, especially in our Black communities and underserved communities, just don't have the resources to feed their children well or provide them with extracurricular educational opportunities. So we are definitely at a disadvantage in our community. So we can tell people, hey, you need to start thinking. I mean, it starts with thinking, but it starts with healthy eating, but can you provide them with the resources they need to eat properly? So it's what I'm saying, it's dynamic, it's layered, it's dimensional. So it's a combination of many things is what I'm saying. The problem is not as simplistic as eat properly, because there are other factors that affect eat properly advice is what I'm trying to say. So I kind of wanted to bring that to the floor.
And you bring a good point. So we're going to take a larger look at this, and I'm going to discuss this a little in detail here. I'm going to go to the world first. My brother Ibrahim brought a good point a while back on the World Economic Forum or the World Education Forum, and he sent me an article a while back on the success of education in the Finland education system. It is considered the best in the world. So there was an article written by a Mike Colagrossi, and he discusses the world impact, the economic impact form, and how it accelerates education and education skills and learning. So he takes a world perspective, and he speaks of the education cycle that starts with the education innovation and then moves towards digital fluency and STEM skills. And then what is the 21st century curricula? What is that curricula? Evidence-based information that leads to the success of education. What are the basic skills needed to excel education? So he starts off releasing data with regard to world education and paraphrasing some of his thought processes. American students consistently ranks near the middle or the bottom of industrialized nations when it comes to performance in math and science. Data is constantly released, which shows that Americans are seriously lagging behind in a number of educational performance and assessments, despite the call for reform. So we have ill-prepared workers, rude adults, and an uninformed populace. Ha, Dr. Muhammad, an uninformed populace.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not public health? Population health. So what happens when this occurs? This becomes the real pandemic.
Right.
Can you comment on that, Dr. Muhammad?
Yes, indeed. And so what do you do about it, right? I mean, you mentioned some of the statistics. I believe United States in education, in terms of math, out of 71 countries, I believe the United States ranks at 38. I believe that was like 5 years ago. I don't know what that number is now.
Yes,
and in terms of science, out of 71 countries, the United States ranks at 24. So there are some disparities there. But we know what the problem is. We know what the issues are. What are we going to do about it? And see, that's what I really want to focus on today, and I want to give an example because, you know, even what happened with COVID-19 in 2020, how the U.S. education system has failed our, you know, our students. It was very much of a challenge to keep the children up to pace with education, but they did find that children who stayed home, they developed a new pattern of learning, a new thought process, and they began to do much better. Some children mostly. I mean, there was some social awkwardness that took place, right, because children are accustomed to being out around other children, being around their peers and thriving and growing. I think that's important. But when they were able to work at home online independently, a lot of children thrived as well, right? They did very well, and they thrived. So in terms of the issues at hand and the problems, I think of the example of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad back in 1934 when, as Muslims, you know, our families were advised to start our own educational system. We have qualms, of course, with the mainstream educational system, but we did something about it, right? We started our first Islamic school system in the United States back in 1934. And believe it or not, it was the first black Islamic school system established in the United States. So we made history. By the time 1974 came, Muhammad University was established across the nation under the auspice of the Nation of Islam, and there were 47 schools established at that time. So what I'm saying is, if there's something that could be done about it, we could bring our children into environments that are conducive for growing and learning and evolving. And we not only do we have these schools, but we produce engineers as a result of our independent education. We produce doctors, physicians, attorneys, and so on and so forth, and we establish businesses. So I'm saying there are things that can be done. And I listen to a lot of parents, and they said, we're going to take matters into our own hands. They have pulled their children out of some of these school systems. Some parents are saying, my child will never see the school system, and their children are accelerating educationally-wise. They're growing. Intelligent-wise, their IQs are peaking. I'm not trying to give you advice telling you to pull your child out of school tomorrow. What I'm saying is other alternatives for your children if they're not thriving in those types of environments. You can take control of your child's situation. If they're getting into trouble, they're being exposed to drug use and abuse, they're being exposed to bullying, there are other routes that you can go in order for your children to grow and to be able to do well in society and to be successful. So never think that you're stuck in a situation with your child. Now, I know some people, they work and they have to send their children to school, but galvanize around other parents who are experiencing the same problems, and maybe you could pull your resources together, and maybe there's a parent that's staying home that was homeschooling your child. I'm just saying there are alternatives. Your child does not have to suffer, and I wanted to give that example. So those are my thoughts on that.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Muhammad. This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellence, Raw Speaks. So as we continue with this study, so before a child can learn anything, what must they be able to excel at? This is the basics. So we're going to use that global example. We start speaking about 21st curricula, some of the basic information, and being in education and being an educator and having that experience. You cannot excel at math and science unless you know how to read.
Amen.
So we're going to go to a reading performance. And again, we're talking about one of the best education school systems in the world. We're going to discuss the 10 reasons why this education system is best in the world. But we're going to start off with a reading metric, a study that was conducted in 2015 that talks about the mean score, the average score of reading. So the United States is right in the middle, and the girls and boys are right at between 480 and 500. course, well, the boys down to just almost the beginning of the 400s, so very low scores there. But Finland is the highest in the world. The girls and boys perform at a mean about 540 and above. In the metric, the lower the score, the lower the reading ability, the higher the score, the higher the reading capability, and Finland is the highest in the world. So what environment contributes to this? I'm going to pause here again. Because Dr. Muhammad, you mentioned something very prolific. You spoke about the environment of starting your own schools. Let's talk about the environment of that school and why some of those schools may be deemed more successful. Can you speak to that for a few minutes?
Yes, I wanted to mention, again, just as we opened up the discussion, that Allah has to be first and foremost in any setting. And if we're from his core and from his essence, we're going to succeed in life because he created everything in the heavens and the universe at our disposal so that we can grow, so that we can exemplify his example. If we're from his essence and from his core, we are supposed to be great and do great things. All the attributes that Allah has, the beneficent, the merciful, we all possess those attributes as well. And so when you teach your child that you are from Allah and you're his child, there's a level of high expectation that's placed on you because you're here to do God's what? You're here to do God's work, and you're here to do God's will. So when you're being imbued with those tenets from day one, you know you're going to succeed because you're a direct descendant from Allah. And you can only be great because Allah is great. So I think you have to instill that thought process in your child from the day that they're in the womb, right? Not when they come out. And so this is the path that you take your children on, and you guide them, and you tell them their mathematics. You tell them their science. Because this, we're all part of Allah's creation. And when they're mathematics or scientists, they become that. They exude that. So I think that's important. I think that starts with the environment. And you have to know that you're a direct descendant of God and that you're here on this place on this earth to do his will and to do his work. So, yes, that's how we'll respond to that.
Beautiful. Thank you. That elates me. That gets me excited. That gives me peace. Oh, my goodness.
All praises be to Allah.
You know, so we'll start talking about some more of the mechanics. So this article then discusses the 10 reasons. And I think, you know, being in an educational environment, I chuckle. Because one of the first things they mentioned, Dr. Muhammad. And I remember, let's tell folks how we were educated. Let's start off there by some dedicated women. Sister Khadija Muhammad. Sister Umakaya. Sister Lola and many, many others. Just a handful of women who dedicated their life to Allah. And you and I, Dr. Muhammad, you are a PhD graduate, and I am a PhD candidate. These were the women who taught us. This is our foundation.
Yes. Yes.
So I can now go to the highest school in the country, in the world, and succeed. You have succeeded. You have completed your study. This was our foundation. So one of the first things they say, and I had to mention our beautiful educators that started off what was then called Muhammad University. and then elevated to Sister Clara Muhammad Elementary and Secondary School. As education became more refined to the basics, to reading, to math, to science. So the first thing they say is, and I had to mention that parallel, no standardized testing. And I remember being an advocate as an educator in Georgia. I wasn't particularly favored, and I worked with the student, the special education population and the regular education population as an alternative teacher. And standardized testing. I think the curriculum was even a curriculum. It just taught to the standardized testing. And if you didn't get the chance to teach all the standardized testing portions, those children didn't do well. So some educators taught specifically to standardized testing. And then someone very talented who knew how to teach outside of standardized testing, so their students would get the foundation that was needed. So one of the first reasons or 10 best reasons why the Finland education system, and you compare that small country, Scandinavian region, to the United States of America and the rest of the world population and what they're doing that's significantly making a difference. No standardized testing. What are your thoughts on that, Dr. Muhammad? No standardized testing.
You mean in the educational system?
Yes.
Are you asking me, do you think that it's fair?
Correct.
Not for our people, it's not.
Why so?
And the reason why I say that, when I say our people, I mean people who are in underserved communities. That could be white, that could be black. It's mostly black and Latino, though. But I will say this, why it's unfair. Because, you know, those who are in the, I would say, higher socioeconomic status or those who have resources to educational programs, like, for instance, in some school systems in the United States, I don't know what it is, I believe it's Massachusetts. When I even think about Minister Farrakhan, how he grew up, the education system was a lot better than it is now. What I mean by that, Minister Farrakhan and other students in general, in the early 50s, in the 40s, education system was a bit stronger. Many of the students learned Latin, right? Latin is very important to understand language and to understand the English language. And when you have standardized testing on, you know, testing and, you know, tests such as SATs, GREs, LSATs, and things like that, you have to understand the language and you have to understand it well. So many of the people have advantages in the sense that they're able to be exposed to Latin, so they can uncover and discover the meaning of words just by understanding Latin. In our communities, we're not offer courses in Latin and the Romantic languages where we can uncover and discover words. So we're at a disadvantage from that standpoint, right, to begin with. And then, again, I had mentioned the United States is 38 in mathematics out of 71 countries.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when we start, when we are in our educational systems and across the country in our communities, we don't have resources like books. Sometimes we don't have qualified educational leadership, or we don't have qualified teachers or certified teachers in math and sciences. So we're at a disadvantage there. And sometimes we have great teachers, but we just don't have resources. We don't have books. We don't have calculators. We don't have the things that we need to thrive in those environments. And so we don't have the resources, and we don't have access to the same education. We live in a country, it's not equal, right? It's unequal, and it still exists. So, you know, when you talk about back in the 60s and the 70s and things of that nature, we almost did a little bit better, with segregation, kind of, right? We haven't really thrived that much more in terms of education in our black communities, because at that time we had more of our own schools, we had more of our businesses, our communities were, you know, they were thriving a little bit more opposed to where we are now. We lost a lot in segregation. I'm not saying that there were some advantages, right? But I'm saying it was a lot of disadvantages, and some more probably in terms of just how we decided to kind of like become reclusive, in a sense that, you know, we didn't have our own schools, we didn't have our own bus companies, we didn't have our own restaurants, and all those things include math, sciences, you know, like our own labs and things like that. We become more of an exclusive, and we sort of blended in more in society, and we lost a lot of our identity. And when you lose your identity, you can't relate on standardized tests, right? What are you relating to? So it's not relatable.
And you bring up a very, very good point because, okay, so the psychology, what is a standardized test? Filling in little bubbles on a Scantron and answering pre-scan questions. It's supposed to be, and I chuckle, and it's supposed to determine mastery. Of course it doesn't determine mastery of a subject. It has, you speak straight to that failure. So Finland has no standardized test. Their only exception is something called a national matriculation exam, which is voluntary for students at the end of an upper secondary school that's equivalent to the American high school system. So they're focusing on that foundation curricula. Can that student read? Can that student write? And they're not putting that pressure on students to achieve. So the student has that mindset or allowed to say, gosh, I can learn this. This is fun. This is exploratory. Students are graded on an individualized basis. And that grading system is set by who? Is it set by a national entity? No. That grading system is set by their teachers. And that teacher, and I remember one of the successes I had, and I still have those scores in my reading segment with the students. We used to go over content constantly. I did not want my students to hear what someone was saying. I wanted them to understand. And often, I would take that paragraph, have the student read it, and say, what did that mean to you? So the teachers track the overall progress. And I remember a young student, she was so hardworking. And she wanted to, she just wanted to achieve, and she was struggling. She was already in second grade, and she would get frustrated. You know, she would be frustrated because that process was frustrating to her. So I put my other students on assignment to do independent reading, and I would bring her over to me, and I would go over a few things. I would go over her vocabulary, and she had a basic content. But when it came to putting sentences together, she had difficulty. So what we did, I said, you know what? I do want her to go under psychological testing because I think she's having some challenges that are not experienced by children her age. And it's called the SST, so that psychological testing is not just psychological, but it also talks about where they are educationally. We had a meeting with her parents, And she, and because I had experience, prior experience working with special ed, I was able to pick up on some things right away. So we were able to get the data, support the data, and her parent was so, so excited. Not so much that she had a special needs diagnosis, but that someone took the time to pay attention to her individually. And that was somewhat of a challenge because those class sizes at times are from 24 to 44. And you don't get that individuality in American school systems because they're so overpopulated.
Mm-hmm.
So tracking overall progress is done by, or the grading system itself is done by the teachers in Finland, and the overall tracking system is done by the Ministry of Education, would be a superintendent example here in the United States. Accountability for teachers. Dr. Muhammad, you said sometimes, and this is so important what you mentioned, you're on point. Sometimes that blame goes to teachers, and rightfully so, but often in this country it's not the teachers. It's the lack of resources.
It is. It is. You know, and it has been shown that there is a correlation between standardized tests and property values. You know, just in our communities, there just isn't educational opportunities that you will find, and again, in higher socioeconomic static regions of the country. And that's a fact. So yeah, there's some racism that's been introduced. And it has racist origins, especially the SAT, that's been introduced because it's very biased, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how, in terms of how we try to focus on our children through the Nation of Islam and through the Muhammad University of Islam, I just want to give a brief example that I'm going to, and I didn't want to interrupt you. And I just wanted to say that we make sure that we give examples in the teaching, in the curriculum, where we can see our children in these examples. So when we start talking about, you know, our ratios, or we start talking about how many, you know, when we do a math problem, we make sure we use names that our children can identify. Like when you read Dr. Seuss and you hear Dr. Seuss, we may say Malika. You know, how many, how high can Malika count? Because we need to hear the name Malika.
Beautiful.
Because we have to identify with who we are. If you can see yourself in education and you can see yourself in science and chemistry and biology, then you will excel. So those are some of the strategies that we use, you know, relatable strategies. And that's what's wrong with some of these tests. We can't see ourselves in these scenarios, and they know it. So it's very biased.
That was so beautiful. And that leads right into cooperation and not competition. While most Americans and other countries see educational system as a big Darwin competition,
right.
The Finns see it differently. The attitude regarding the educational system cannot be artificial or arbitrary. There is no list of top performing schools. I find that to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Or teachers. Let's go back to Sister Clara Muhammad in elementary secondary school. You know, among all the schools that were in the nation, in the country, it had that premise. There was no top performing schools or teachers. You had some schools performing differently because resources that were available to them, et cetera, et cetera. But all the schools were the best schools because why? They were teaching our children.
Mm-hmm.
And we've moved away from that. You touched right on that. So thank you for interrupting earlier because you brought that point before I even mentioned it. You went right there, Dr. Muhammad.
Oh, praise the people. I didn't mean to interrupt you, though.
No, no, it's okay. So it goes back to making the basics the priority.
Right.
Various school systems are concerned with increasing test scores, right? Comprehension in math and science. And they tend to forget, and I think this is such an important point that the author brings up, what constitutes a happy, harmonious, and healthy student and learning environment. And they make a note here that decades ago, the Finnish school system was in need of some serious reform, so they took that very seriously. And one of the things they did, they turned back to the basics. It wasn't about dominating with excellent marks and, you know, upper class skills or upper educator skills. They really made a difference. Here we go. Their first target was school environment. School environment. We had an instructor called Sister Teacher Minnie. And she was a scholar, in my opinion, in the English language. She was a walking dictionary, literally. And one of the things, how she started off her class, we all laughed. It was called TR0 at that time. I just have a good memory. I can't believe I'm bringing this all up. I think I was in the seventh or eighth grade, something to that effect. But it was a meditation. And in that meditation, she said, I want you, during that meditation time, to think about nothing. I want you just to empty your mind. And I need to point out, Dr. Muhammad, the boys and the girls were separated in the school environment, so we only had a half a day of education. Look how far we went.
Yes.
A half a day of education. That was the format and the environment. And look how far we went.
Yes.
So environment. So the Finnish educators, they focus on environment. And it should be an instrument, Dr. Muhammad, you just mentioned, you talked about that social inequality. And they said the first thing we address is that education should be an instrument to balance out social inequality. All students, not some students, receive free school meals. Dr. Muhammad, we're going to pause on this next one for 2 minutes here. Ease of access to health care.
That's a big one.
Psychological counseling. Individualized guidance. So they started saying, you know what, we have to deal with the collective environment of equality. Starting school at an older age. You know, sometimes I think here we start at 4.5, 5, that's too soon. Because you haven't developed the various modalities of the brain even at that time. They're still learning. So often we would find, you know, that second grade, that's when you would really start finding educational disabilities. You could not really determine before then. I mean, some cases they did, you know, they had various programs across the nation. You know, if infants or toddlers weren't responding to a certain skill set at a specific time, then it was watched. But you really cannot develop that total diagnosis until they're older anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Not too much older, but you're looking in first and second grade. It's too much older, then it's a disservice to the child. So I think that's a good point in you know, being an educator in the past, being able to pull that together. Providing, and you know Brother Ibrahim is big on this one, providing professional options past traditional college degree. We can't speak about education being equal if we don't have this component. So the current pipeline for education in America is stagnant. Children are stuck in that K-12 circuit, jumping from teacher to teacher, each grade, preparing for the next. And so then this cyclic phenomenon of education that gives double message. Do it this way, you'll be successful. They try to do it that way, they're not successful. And then there's no explanation. And many students don't need a college education to get good paying profession. We're going to be working with Brother Ibrahim closely in the future, bringing him on, because trades need to be recognized, need to be a part of the education system in the United States of America to balance out inequality. Dr. Muhammad, your thoughts on that?
Well, it looks like we have 1 minute maybe left to go. And I don't think I could kind of wrap this up in 1 minute. But I will say this, as we close, to parents or if you know someone in a community who's struggling educationally wise, I think one of the takeaways is that there are always other options to education. Education is just not sitting in the classroom, listening to the teacher instruct the entire day. You know, education is content, being able to expose your children to the world, to life experiences, share experience and create memories for them. That's education. It doesn't just, you know, your child may not want to go to college. Never put them down for not wanting to explore their gifts and their talents. Allah puts in each and every one of us a gift that we can do perfect without little effort. Tap into the gifts and talents of your child and feed that gift and that talent, whatever that may be, and it may not be college. So when you mention trades, you know, you may have a son or a daughter or a son who, or it doesn't matter, whatever it is that they want to do, whether they want to work on vehicles, they want to be auto mechanics or whatever they want to do. They want to go into cosmetology. They want to be a pilot. They want to become a chemist or a physician or an attorney. See that gift. And don't wait until they're 15 or 16 to do it. Okay, don't do that. It's not going to work. You do it from the inception of the time that they're born. So just know that your child does not have to conform to the rules and the standards of this world. You can always think outside of the box in terms of education and expose your children to different realities and different, you know, experiences, and expose them, allow them to travel. If they can't travel, go get a book. If they want to go to Africa, you may not have the money. That's fine. You tell them they'll get there one day, and then you'll provide them with the books on Africa and their greatness that came out of Egypt and their greatness that came out of the world, their contribution as kings and queens. They can read that. They don't have to go to these places to know that. But you can put it in their mind that they will get there one day. And once they get there, the benefit is that they'll know all about the country. So don't. What I'm saying is, don't limit yourself and don't limit your children. Don't limit your future generations because you don't have to.
All praise is due to Allah. Now, Dr. Muhammad, you did that beautifully, woman. I don't know what you're talking about. You did that fantastic.
All praise is due to Allah.
Thank you for being here with us. We'll see you again in August. This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent, Maraz Speaks. Thank you for joining us today. Dr. Muhammad, if you let the audience, listening audience, know where you can be reached.
Okay. I can be reached by my first name and last name. N, Nancy A, Apple, D, David I, Indigo, or D, Dawood. We're going to start implementing Islamic names right now. I, Ishmael, A, Abraham, Nadia, Muhammad, that's spelled with it, U, M-U-H, A-M-M, A-D, 1-2, at yahoo.com.
So much, Dr. Muhammad. If you want to reach me, I am Salima, S-A-L-I-M-A-H-M-O-H, 77, at gmail.com. Thank you for joining us today. And to the listening audience, thank you.
Thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum.